Well, here we go. It's a take three. Very good value. Questions.
Schmestions.
If you've got someone who can say that properly and not the way I'm saying it, that would be great. You can send it as a voice note. So the questions are film-related stuff, and the non-film stuff are the schmestions. Anthony from Berlin. What does Mark mean when he says a movie is handsomely mounted? Which is something that you say
it
a lot.
It is, yeah.
Both in the origin of the phrase and what he is referring to on the screen itself.
Usually, if I say it, what I mean is that the production design and the cinematography make it a good-looking film. When I say a good-looking film, I mean a visually lush film. So handsomely mounted usually means that it is, you know, it is visually lush. I presume that handsomely mounted, the phrase, comes from as in mounting, as in to present something. Like if, you know, if something is handsomely mounted, it means it's presented in a way which is, I suppose there's the implication of being ornate, but that's why I use handsome rather than lavishly mounted, which would mean, you know, florid. So that's what I mean. If I say handsomely mounted, I generally mean the production design and the way the production design is shot by the cinematographer is visually impressive. And I would say that probably applies, if you wanted to cliche it, you would think of like the draftsman's contract is handsomely mounted.
Right. If there was a film that was ever called Handsomely Mounted, it might be the kind of book that the good lady, Professor Heron Doss, has already watched on her...
Top shelf material. Handsomely Mounted and Handsomely Mounted 2.
Even more mounting. Elliot, age 26, in Leicester.
Goodwill Mounting.
That's also good.
That is actually the name of a...
Is it?
It is, yes.
Oh, dear. Medium-ish term listener here. My schmestion to you is somewhat personal.
Okay.
But one I'd be intrigued to get your take on. At the start of 2020, what with one thing and another going on, I decided to close my Twitter account. The constant negativity and vile, borderline, inhumane attitudes from those we look to for leadership, alongside the general bickering regarding the continuously horrid events of the 21st century, finally caught up with me, and I couldn't bear to see it anymore.
And you're not alone in that.
Whilst I decided to keep myself going with general word engagement on Instagram, during the summer months of that year, I also decided to free myself of that application as well and stop reading the news on a daily basis. Since then, I've made the efforts to entirely disengage myself from current affairs, both in the UK and globally, thus finding myself free of the constant cynicism and a general feeling of fast approaching doomsday. As a lover of cinema, music and art, this has left me in the dark regarding what's going on in those worlds, and I'm sure that I do occasionally miss out on pieces of media that I would love. But at the same time, I'm a much happier person now. My question to you fine gents concerns these modern ways of consuming information. What is your general relationship with social media like? Have you ever considered parting ways with it, even if it is a vital tool to your work? And what methods do you use to disengage yourself from the harshness of reality? My thanks as always to your fine selves and suitable praise at that point. Down with Trolls, not the perfectly fine film of the same name, and cynicism, up with better mental health for everyone. I'm always struck when conversations like this come up, and as you say, many people have the same attitudes, is the good lady ceramicist is also on Twitter, but she only follows... You can make social media a better... You know, it is not of itself rotten. Like the printing press was not of itself a rotten invention. But if... So she follows artists and ceramicists because that's the world that she lives in. Therefore, she doesn't get... I mean, she's probably changed a bit, but if you can tailor make it so that you only follow artists, or you can't even do comedians really, because they'll feel as though they have to comment on things, but you can follow people who only write poetry or something like that, and so that there's nothing inherently wrong with it. It depends who you follow. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think exactly that. Basically, your Twitter feed is what you make it. And one of the things that I am very, very in favor of is the blocking function. So basically, when people say, oh, you know, I go on Twitter and I'm just inundated with this stuff. Well, you're not. If you only ever go on Twitter and look at your ats, which are things sent to you, they are only ever things that, or look at just the things that you are following. You can, as you said, for example, you can decide to just simply follow artists because those are the people that you're interested in. Or you can decide to follow people who you are politically engaged with or socially engaged with. You define what's on your Twitter thing. One of the things I get quite a lot is that people say, oh, you know, you block so many people on Twitter. Why? Because I don't want them in my life. It's not censorship. They can carry on saying whatever they want. If anybody ever sends me a single message that says, block, thank you, not interested, not interested. Oh, well, you're blocking out other people's opinions. Yep. Yep, because there are other people's opinions exist in the world and on the news. But I don't. So
the general vibe that Elliot has, which is for my peace of mind / mental health, yeah, I am going to switch this off.
That's
I think
fine.
That's entirely understandable.
Entirely understandable. And at least one of my children did exactly that. And I think, incidentally, as a younger person, doing that is a particularly brave thing to do. But they did because they just didn't need it in their life anymore. So I think the key thing with social media for me is this. If you're not in control of it, if it is doing anything that upsets and distresses you, stop it. Either stop it by doing what I do, which is like literally I've blocked every Republican or Tory politician. I just don't care what they think on Twitter. I'll find out what they think on the news. Anybody who sends me any form of message that's in any way aggressive or sorry, blocked. My blocked list is a thing of beauty. It's thousands of people. Or do what you did, which is not you, what the email writer, come off it completely. I personally like to have it because on my Twitter account, I'm in contact with filmmakers and musicians and people who share my political views and prejudices, and I enjoy interacting with them. And I don't have a problem with that. And your Twitter account is generally very genial.
It is.
It's very, very rarely. In fact, I struggle to think of a single case in which you've got off your bike about something other than like the worst you would do is say, oh, for heaven's sake, or something like that. And you and I have we're different in that. But what's important is that we're both in control of it. The worst thing is when it's in control of you. And that's why a film like Unfriended is such a brilliant horror film, because it's a film about people not being able to log off from Facebook. And I would stress this again, if you are a grown up, your situation is infinitely better than there are young people today who are growing up who are terrorized by social media. And I think that social media itself is neither a good nor a bad thing. It is just a thing. But I think throwing it at young people in a way in which they feel like they have to be on it because otherwise they're excluded from so much is, I think, brutal and cruel.
I think it's possible to find what the sources of the negativity are. You know, and if it's the news that's causing your problem, unplug from the news.
Yeah.
Unplug from journalists. Yeah. Unplug from the people that are telling you this stuff.
Yeah.
Find people who say nice. You know, there are lots of art accounts. For example, I went to the Rice Museum and I thought, this is very nice. You can follow them on Twitter and they send you nice pictures. Okay, that's nice. It is possible to fill Instagram and Twitter with pleasantness. But if it's the whole thing is causing you an issue, then unplug from the whole thing.
Can I just say, there's a guy on Twitter called Giles Paley Phillips, who basically is nice, and and one of the things that he does quite regularly is quite randomly send you a message saying, just wanted to say, like what you do and hope you're okay. And you know him as well, right? So through Twitter.
Yeah.
Because he's just one of those people who ends up having loads and loads of followers because he's nice.
Yes.
Because he's nice and generous and positive and, you know, and on the right side of that generosity.
Maybe the thing to do is to delete, start again, unfollow everybody.
Everyone.
And then start again as to the people who you're missing the most.
But can I also say, enjoy and embrace the block button, Blocking people on Twitter is one of the great joys of life. I don't feel it's been a full day if I haven't blocked 5 or 10 people.
Also, mute people. If you still want it to look as though you're following them because they might be checking on you, you can just mute them.
Oh, no, I like blocking them. It's okay. Like, yeah, I've blocked you because I have no interest in what you say.
Bella says, my question is this. I'm an 18-year-old lover of films and I have seen many courtesy of my parents' influence and my own curiosity to discover new and old films. However, I really struggle to appreciate old black and white films. I don't know if it's a stylistic issue that I have because I tend to like films about romance with beautiful colour schemes and soundtracks, like, for example, Her, Fantastic Mr. Fox and Amelie. So do you have any suggestions for me so I can get stuck into this? So Bella is thinking if she wants to get into black and white movies,
yes,
but she has failed to do so.
Okay.
So maybe three suggestions of, if you're finding it a struggle, maybe you'll like these.
Well, may I start by suggesting a film which has both black and white and colour, which is A Matter of Life and Death, the Powell and Pressburger film, which appears to take place partly on Earth and partly in heaven. Actually, not heaven, partly in the next realm, or maybe it isn't. Maybe it's all imagined. It actually says this at the very beginning of the film, that maybe this is all imagined. And of course, what you would expect is, if part of the film was in black and white, part of it was in colour, I know that you will have seen the film anyway, you would expect that it's the colour is the other one, but it's not. It's the other way round, that the colour is on Earth, with glorious, you know, glorious saturated colour, and the black and white are the scenes that are in the other world that may or may not be heaven. And I think that's really interesting because I think it might lead you, if you're a fan of colour films anyway, you should see it because all Powell and Pressburger's, the way in which they use colour is fantastic. But so that, I would say. I would say, I presume you've seen Psycho. If you haven't, go and look at that, because obviously Psycho was a film that was made at a point when colour was an option. Black and white, as it turned out, was cheaper, and there was a whole thing about whether or not Psycho actually began life as, you know, as a TV production. But the way in which Psycho works is partly because it is in black and white. And when you watch the remake of Psycho by Gus Van Sant, which is in colour, you realise just what a brilliant aesthetic decision it was to make it in black and white. And the third thing I would say is, although this sounds like I'm being contrary, but I don't think I am. If you look at very, very early silent films like Nosferatu, which I've been thinking about a lot recently because Professor Sir Christopher Frayling has recently been writing about vampires, there was at one point they tried to destroy all the prints of Nosferatu. And an awful lot of black and white films were tinted, so they had colour given to them, you know, so they were tinted like maybe sepia or whatever it was. So when you watch black and white films, a lot of them actually aren't black and white. They're brown and white, or, you know, kind of strange orange and white. And very, very early black and white films were often hand tinted. I mean, some of the stuff by Méliès, they'd be literally hand tinting frames. But if you go back and watch something like Nosferatu, I think that there is a beauty and a stark genius in that film that really is to do with it being black and white. And the fourth thing I would say is watch the black and white version of Parasite, because that's a fascinating compare and contrast. You know, that there is a black and white version of Parasite that director Bong, who you interviewed, actually said that it does something starker about the way in which it makes the differences apparent between the rich and the poor. Because when you take the colour out of Parasite, what you see is the surfaces. And on the black and white, what you see is the shiny surfaces against the gritty surfaces. And it does a very interesting thing.
What about the Peter Jackson movie about the war?
Yeah, that's going into colour.
What's that called?
That's called They Shall Not Grow Old.
They Shall Not Grow Old. So, yes, that's, but it start. What I mean is just interesting just because it goes from one to the other.
Yeah, exactly. But that starts with old footage, and then that footage is then colourised, you know, artificially colourised, and also recalibrated to be the right speed and given interstitial frames and then turned into 3D. So it's like, you know.
But it is a gasp moment.
It is an absolute.
Even though you know it's coming.
It's an absolute gasp moment. But in a way, that's the opposite way. That's going from this is film, but this looks like. Because when that gasp moment happens, and it's as the troops are marching into the trenches, the gasp is, oh, wow, that's not a historical film. That looks like something that's happening in front of me now.
Okay. Shen Lau says, I'd like to thank you both for existing.
That's right.
I mean, it's a bare minimum, really.
It is.
On balance, I've considered this and I think, okay, thanks.
Well, you know what? Sartre wasn't so sure.
Shit, very good.
If pretentious,
what? Oh, well, that's Alexis Sell, isn't it? I met that Jean-Paul Sartre. He was so stupid he didn't know he existed. I proved he existed. I nutted him. I argued empirically.
Shen Lau says, your podcast is the only one I feel inclined enough to pay for and enjoy at a normal playback speed. Like so many people listen to stuff plus two.
Yes.
Times two.
Yeah.
Also, as a birthday present, my long-suffering brother, Pater, or possibly Partha, and I will be at your Halloween special show.
Yay.
In which case, Shen Lau, you can accuse me saying of getting your brother's pronunciation wrong. We're both looking forward to it immensely. My current job is reliably mundane, and recently I've been on my own in the office. After running out of podcasts one day and having heard all the news I could stomach, I attempted to listen to a film whilst working. I picked The Exorcist, the film I've seen countless times.
Well, yeah.
And a film
that's
I love,
a soundtrack and a half.
Mainly because of The Good Doctor. What proceeded was 2 hours of my mind's eye forming the scenes
Very
I've
good.
Watched countless times. Other than jumping out of my skin when someone entered the room. Mm-hmm. I can't see any drawbacks to listening to a film at work. Does the church agree? Well, we don't obviously represent the entirety of the church. And I have to say, I have never listened to a film. I imagine Shen Lau is getting on with work mm-hmm. and then just playing
the film,
a movie. So it's a bit like a radio drama.
Yes.
I suppose. I have never done that. I can't imagine actually doing it, Shen Lau, but we'll find out what people think. Have you ever just sort of got on with it and listened to a film?
Yes. So obviously I have the soundtrack album of Dougal and the Blue Cat, which is a slightly abridged, but only slightly abridged version of the feature film, in which you just listen to it and you see the film in your head, which is beautiful. I once recorded the whole of the Richard Gere Breathless as a soundtrack. And then I would play that as a cassette when I was driving around because I just loved the film so much and I didn't have a video player. So I just recorded the audio and I would listen to the audio. So yes, I have done it. The Exorcist is a particularly interesting case because the soundtrack of The Exorcist is so avant-garde. I mean, I know now, of course, it's been, you know, mixed and remixed. Buzz Knudsen did the original mix on it. It's just fascinating. There's so much of what's going on in that film is to do with the sound, you know. It's
what an excellent endeavor in exorcism, Garris.
It's Mercedes McCambridge and all the stuff that Ron Nagel was doing with the bees in a jar. And yeah, it's amazing.
I have got a thought pertaining to a previous question.
Yes.
If Elon Musk takes over Twitter,
yeah,
I have thought of
going off,
of coming off it just because it feels like
feeding the vampire.
I'm not quite sure what I think about it.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think in terms of the ownership of the platform, there is an issue. And I think if Elon Musk, who is an idiot, and there's a very funny thing that there's a film out at the moment in which there is a character who I'm trying not to spoil anything.
It's not out yet.
It's not out. Oh, no, it's not out. No, that's right. Okay, you know what? I said, well done, well interrupted. There is a film in which there is a character clearly inspired by Elon Musk. And the way you know he's inspired by Elon Musk is that he is a billionaire tech giant who is an idiot and a narcissist and an arse.
And the wealthiest man in the world is clearly very good. I wouldn't, you know, and if someone gave me one of his cars, that would be fine. It's just. Interesting conundrum.
It is an interesting conundrum. And we will definitely discuss that if and when.
If you have any questions, film-related stuff, or schmestions, which is just life, the universe and everything, the address is the same, correspondence@kerbenomeo.com. Thank you.